Brad Hayes, you have a very important specialty in the Supreme Court. And in our course of our conversations this week, I didn't want to let you go on that. So what's coming up before the Supreme Court that we need to keep our eye on?
Well, there are two kind of big cases. One where oral arguments have already been heard in an affirmative action case that will be very high profile moving forward. And then, of course, the issue of same-sex marriage, which will be heard at the end of March. Those are the two kind of big cases that are garnering a lot of attention. And they're very, very interesting because, of course, we have had past conversations about Justice Kennedy as the swing vote.
I would say the so-called swing vote.
Yeah, well,
he swings the wrong way for me an awful lot.
Right. Although, you know, on these issues, right, he might swing both left and right. Right. This is a good exercise in seeing him as the swing vote. And we are expecting these decisions to be close. And they won't both be 5-4 because in the affirmative action case, Justice Kagan has recused herself because of some involvement with the case when she was Solicitor General. So it's a 4-4 kind of scenario if, in fact, he were to join with the liberals. But both cases present some really interesting issues. In the affirmative action case, it's a case coming out of the University of Texas. And the question really is, can you use race in admissions as a way of giving a benefit to historically discriminated against groups? And the four locked-in conservatives, particularly Chief Justice Roberts, has really targeted affirmative action, saying basically we should be done with it. There's been enough time in the last case on affirmative action that the Supreme Court heard. Roberts wrote that the way to stop discriminating based on race is to stop discriminating based on race. And so, you know, he has clearly targeted affirmative action to go into kind of the constitutional waste bin. Interestingly, in that case, Kennedy agreed with the majority, but he wrote a concurring decision where he said, wait a minute, Roberts, we can't just get rid of this, that we have to keep it as a viable option in cases of last resort, where you've tried other things and we can't get greater racial equality, that affirmative action needs to be there, right? So the question is, you know, is this a case where, in fact, affirmative action is necessary to increase diversity at a place like the University of Texas? That remains, in terms of oral argument, he appeared rather skeptical. But it's difficult to extrapolate from questions and answers in oral argument and say that that's where he's going to be for the final decision.
How often, Brad, can you tell from the oral arguments where they're going?
It's hard. You can't always tell. I mean, you can kind of get a sense of what issues they're thinking about and then try to link them into their kind of their past line of thinking on that issue. But sometimes they're asking questions for different reasons. They might be asking questions because they want another justice to hear it. They may, in fact, want a better answer so that they sound skeptical. But the reason they sound skeptical is they want that issue to be fleshed out more, right? They want a more sophisticated response. So while it does tell us something about, you know, the way that they're leaning, and you can get a sense about, you know, how on board they are. In fact, the two liberal members of the court that were a part of the last supportive majority for an affirmative action case, going all the way back to a University of Michigan case, they were very much, you know, you could tell by their questioning that they were very much trying to find ways to uphold the constitutionality of the University of Texas policy. But, you know, at the same time, you have to take these with a grain of salt. Lots of people were making claims based on what happened with the Affordable Care Act and the oral arguments there, and many of them turned out to be wrong. So you do have to kind of take the oral argument with a grain of salt.
So what else you got for us besides affirmative action?
Same-sex marriage. There are actually two cases that the Supreme Court is hearing, one coming out of California and Proposition 8, and the second one coming out of a challenge to the Defense of Marriage Act. It's actually coming out of New York State. These are really, really interesting cases because they do present the opportunity for the court to say that there is a constitutional right to same-sex marriage. However, there are also a lot of other things involved in these cases, including a slew of jurisdictional issues that, you know, this gets people that are court watchers excited, but nobody else excited. The jurisdictional issue, for example, in California is that the state is not appealing the case. The appeal is being brought by people who wanted to get the proposition adopted. And there's a question about whether they have standing to sue. And in order to have standing, you usually have to show some kind of injury, but it's not clear what their injury is. The state of California basically said, we believe that they have standing, and the Ninth Circuit basically agreed to this. But the Supreme Court has never really resolved whether a state law can give standing for the purposes of federal jurisdiction. In terms of that second case with the Defense of Marriage Act, there's very clearly an injury in that particular case involving inheritance law and taxation. But the administration said they're not going to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. So the defense is being marshaled by the Bipartisan Legal Advisory Group. OK, what this is actually not a bipartisan group because the Democratic membership on this voted not to do it. Rather, it's really a Republican group that is defending the Defense of Marriage Act. And there's an open question about whether this Republican group has standing. You know, again, what is their stake in this? And can they, in fact, act in lieu of the administration?
And once again, just to clarify for everybody who may be listening to this, the Defense of Marriage Act says man and woman.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And basically it says that for federal purposes, it's a man and a woman, and that states don't have to abide by a same-sex marriage enacted in a different state. And so that, you know, if a same-sex couple goes and gets married in New York and they take it back to Nebraska, sure, Nebraska doesn't have to acknowledge it. And so there's a lot of stuff going on in these cases, which enables the court to act somewhat prudentially. In other words, if they don't feel comfortable making the grand decision, they can in fact find ways around that decision, both whether it be grand as in like there is a constitutional right to same-sex marriage or there is not. But going back to Justice Kennedy, right, in the last two cases that gave constitutional rights to gays and lesbians were authored by Justice Kennedy. Justice Kennedy in Romer versus Evans and in Lawrence versus Texas carved out constitutional protections based on sexual identity. And so, you know, in this particular case, it looks like he might be much more sympathetic to finding some kind of right to same-sex marriage, or if he doesn't go quite that far, at least, you know, striking down portions of the Defense of Marriage Act.
So with Kagan on this one, she gets to vote in this case.
She does. She does.
The other one. And of course, if Kennedy comes over, that would be presumably a 5-4 decision.
That's correct.
Well, Brad Hayes, we always love talking to you. It's terrific to have you here. I'm always impressed by your loquaciousness and your ability to tell us the way things really are. Again, thanks so much for being here.
That's my pleasure.